The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. I want to mention a great resource for writers, and this month's sponsor, Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. I'll expound later in the show, but the short version is this long-awaited book about the craft of creative writing from New York Times bestselling author Steve Almond sets out to debunk the well-meaning but misguided myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and most honest work. Pick up a copy today of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, wherever you buy books, more soon. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
I always had a fire in my belly, this dream of writing, you know, of comedy writing specifically. Dave Letterman, you know, I loved, and Saturday Night Live, and, you know, Chris Rock, all of those, you know, Sandler, all of those people when I was growing up who, you know, the laughter helps you get through a lot of tough times, you know, and I thought, and I knew I had a funny bone, you know, everybody told me I was funny all the time, but it's so hard to believe, Kelton, because you're in it all the time. And it's so hard for me to believe now. But I did. You have to just try to understand. I had no idea that there was an entertainment world. You know, I didn't know. I mean, I saw it. But the idea of a kid who grew up in Buffalo, New York, you know, I mean, I was born in a, you know, in an apartment above a hardware store in this little town in Buffalo called Lovejoy, which is an immigrant town. The idea of, hey, there's Hollywood, or you could earn a good living doing what you love, never occurred to me. And, you know, and that's why I started to pursue that dream. You know, you said, how did it start? It was just being, you know, kind of discouraged, looking in the reflection, thinking, I don't want to do this my whole life. I have nothing to lose by giving this a try.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance, per usual. Acclaimed TV and movie writer Adam Lorenzo spoke to me about owning a college bar while still in college, his work ethic and what keeps him hustling pages, and his latest college survival guide, All I Need to Know, I Learned from My College Bar. Adam's a writer-producer who works in both live action and animation, who started as a joke writer, selling material to Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon on Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update, Jimmy Kimmel, and David Letterman, which resulted in his first staff writing job on The Late Late Show with Craig Kilborn, co-created and executive produced by Letterman. Other notable TV credits include Emmy-winning Everybody Loves Raymond, Are We There Yet?, starring Terry Crews and Ice Cube, and Everybody Hates Chris, based on the life of Chris Rock. Before successfully pursuing his dream of being a writer, he owned a college bar while still a student at Syracuse University. The author's debut in publishing, naturally, is All I Need to Know, I Learned from My College Bar, a whimsical look at what Adam calls the valuable life lessons learned working and laughing with people from all over the world in that cathedral of knowledge known as a college bar. The self-described college survival guide is based on his life and has illustrations by Antonio Giovanni Pena of The New Yorker. In this file, Adam and I discussed how he faked and faxed his way into Dave Letterman's heart, why his writing career effectively ended his marriage, how a kid from Buffalo, New York made it in Hollywood, why he spent so much time at a little-known library at the Writers Guild of America, the Sicilian barber that got him his big break into sitcoms, my own college bar challenge, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us.
Okay,
We are back on the Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by an esteemed guest. I have the acclaimed TV and movie writer producer Adam Lorenzo is hanging out with us today, man. I am excited to talk to you about all the things.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Very, very, very pumped.
Okay. Same. I can't wait to talk all things writing and, of course, your first hilarious foray into publishing, All I Need to Know, I Learned from My College Bar, which it really truly is a font of wisdom. Is that a thing?
It is now.
Okay. But yeah, I can't wait to talk about that and this really, really fascinating and inspiring career path that you've had dating all the way back to owning a bar in college, which is a crazy story. Of course, we're going to get into that one. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a little bit about this writing career, kind of like, I mean, how you got into this LA comedy world, rubbing elbows with some kind of a who's who there of not only late night television, but then going on to work with, yeah, some big name talent there. But yeah, take us back a little bit and maybe describe that moment when you decided, yeah, I'm gonna make this foray into comedy writing.
You got it. That's a great place to start. You know, when I decided to change my life and go for that dream. And before I get going, I just want to let you know how awesome your podcast is, and I've listened to a bunch of them, and I've been doing a lot of them, but you're top shelf, and you're extremely prepared, tight ship you run. So I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I listened to Carter, the How I Met Your Mother co-creators last night, and I thought that was great too. It's been fun for me to listen to all different kinds of writers on your show, and it's fun because I do think probably my path is a little different, which is the segue into things. And I did own a college bar when I was in college at Syracuse.
Amazing.
And I had always wanted to write this book, All I Need to Know, I Learned from My College Bar. It's been baking since then, you know, and I thought in college, I thought I was going to be, you know, I really didn't know. I was hustling, trying to, you know, just trying to make my way. I was surviving, you know, dreams weren't where I come from, you know, dreams weren't something you pursued, you know, it was just like, how do I make it? You know, how do I stay alive? And that's the mindset I was in. And I was just, you know, I was bartending every night. I was running this place. You know, I'd look at myself in the reflection in the mirror behind the bar. And I'd think, man, I cannot do this the rest of my life. You know, I don't want to be one of these people in here, you know. And it's great for those people who are, but that wasn't me. And I always had this, you know, I always had a fire in my belly, this dream of writing, you know, of comedy writing specifically. Dave Letterman, you know, I loved, and Saturday Night Live, and, you know, Chris Rock, all of those, you know, Sandler, all of those people when I was growing up who, you know, the laughter helps you get through a lot of tough times, you know? And I thought, and I knew I had a funny bone, you know, everybody told me I was funny all the time, but it's so hard to believe, Kelton, because you're in it all the time. And it's so hard for me to believe now, but I did. You have to just try to understand. I had no idea that there was an entertainment world. You know, I didn't know. I mean, I saw it, but the idea of a kid who grew up in Buffalo, New York, you know, I mean, I was born in a, you know, in an apartment above a hardware store in this little town in Buffalo called Lovejoy, which is an immigrant town. When my grandmother died a few years ago, they sold her house, which I thought was a mansion, you know, for $15,000, 1-5.
Wow.
Yeah. So that, you know, to the idea of, hey, there's Hollywood or you could earn a good living doing what you love never occurred to me. And that's why, you know, and that's why I started to pursue that dream. You know, you said, how did it start? It was just being, you know, kind of discouraged, looking in the reflection, thinking, I don't want to do this my whole life. I have nothing to lose by giving this a try. And I got, you know, really lucky. You know, I don't know if it could happen today. I've always had faith too, though. I've been kind of guided spiritually. But I did call the Letterman show. I called Dave show. And, you know, I used to stay up late and watch him all the time. So that was kind of the dream, you know, like how could I get a job on the Dave Letterman show? You know, as crazy as that sounds, that's what I thought. You know, I thought, geez, you know, I give it a shot. And I called and I said, how do you get a job? I got, you know, somebody on the phone there, and they said, oh, you got to have an agent. You know, is that why you're calling? You know, do you know someone on the show? It was a very awkward conversation. You can imagine I cold called, you know, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And they said, you know, if we have a, luckily it was a polite person. And they said, you know, we have a joke list. If that's why you're calling, we pay $100 a joke. If you know one of the writers, you can be put on a list. Do you know one of the writers? And I didn't, of course, I knew no one. But that night, you know, hung up, you know, and then that night I watched the credits and I picked the name of a writer randomly and I called back the next day and I said, hey, I know this writer so-and-so said I could be on some kind of list about jokes. And they said, oh, we love that writer, you know, and we're going to send you a release. And they sent me the release. Thank God nobody checked.
Wow.
And, you know, this is faxing, you know, this is right as emails, you know, this was still dial tone. Emailing the, you know, it wasn't like now instant. So I signed it and I started to write jokes. You know, I mean, I didn't know what they looked like, but I went to the store and would get the New York Post and the New York Times, and I started to write jokes and started to send them in, and they started to buy a lot of them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how I got in. Look, I mean, you know, when I think about that, it's unbelievable, you know, when I talk about it now, where I am now, where I'm sitting now. Mm. But, you know, your podcast really, you know, has a lot of elements of trying to be inspiring, I think, for anyone who might want to be getting into writing or anything that they're doing, you know. And I love anybody who goes after what they love, you know, if it's an athlete, if it's a painter, or if it's, you know, whatever that chefs, you know when someone's got that passion, you know. And I couldn't, you know, there was no not pursuing this for me.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned an invaluable resource for writers. Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories based on 3 decades of writing, failing, and trying again. Author Steve Almond is a beloved professor at Harvard and Wesleyan and the acclaimed New York Times bestseller of 12 books of fiction and nonfiction. And in Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, Steve employs the radical empathy he displayed as a co-host of the Dear Sugars podcast with Cheryl Strayed, where they explored the joys and trials of storytelling to explode myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and truest work. The book includes chapters on plot, character, and chronology, but travels far beyond the earnest intentions of most craft books. It also includes writing prompts to generate new work. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo called it one of the best books on writing he's ever read, and also the funniest. Pick up a copy of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories, wherever you buy books, and add it to your TBR today. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on.
So anyway, so I got lucky. You know, I started to sell a bunch of stuff to them, and they had called, and they, you know, it was great timing because they were starting a new show in Los Angeles called The Late Late Show with Craig Kilborn. And I met, they called one day and said, we want you to meet our producer, a guy named Billy Kimball, who, you know, he's an incredible writer. He ran the Harvard Lampoon and he just won a bunch of Emmys for Veep and The Simpsons. And he's a great guy. And I went to go meet him in New York. You know, I dressed up in a suit and he showed up in ripped jeans and flip flops. And Kelton, he said, we don't have any jobs. That's what he said. I wanted to meet you. I ran the Harvard Lampoon. You have a unique voice. And now I had no idea what the Harvard Lampoon was. You know, I thought like Mad Magazine or something. I didn't know what the heck he was talking about. He was very fancy, but I didn't know. And so, you know, we don't have any jobs. And that was it. I went back on the Metro North out of New York City, kind of crestfallen in my new clothes. And then a couple days later, I heard from a colleague of his that he wrote with Al Franken, a big Saturday Night Live guy. I couldn't believe that Al Franken was on my phone. And he said, you know, I went to where, you know, I'm buddies with Billy and, you know, he went to Harvard too. He goes, you want to meet? And I met him and he was looking for a writer. And then Kelton, things just took off. You know, I met Al. It was unbelievable. But then the Late Late Show called and they said they called on a Friday afternoon. I was back east and they said, you know, we're going to offer you a job on the Late Late Show. We're going to put you on staff. You have to let us know by the end of the day. And you'd have to move to Los Angeles, California by Sunday night because you'd start work on Monday. And I had just gotten engaged to my now ex-wife. And, you know, I didn't know what to do other than, I got to take this job. And she was, devastated because she didn't want to move to Los Angeles. She had a big, beautiful family there and in New York. And I had nothing to lose. So we had our engagement party that Sunday. You know, I'm going around telling everybody I got the job. It's very exciting, you know, repeating jokes. It's unbelievable. And she was not as excited. And, you know, and then I moved out here and that was it. And we didn't stay married very long. And I never saw her again. And, you know, we were so young and she was such a good person and her family was so great. And then I started my Hollywood journey, you know, then I was out here, 24 hours later, they move you out here, you know, it's all Writers Guild of America stuff. I had to join that and they put you in a hotel and they pay for your moving expenses and, you know, all of those things. And I had never been to California, you know, they pick you up at the airport, you know, where are you, Kelton?
I'm in North Carolina.
Yeah. So, you know. I don't know, you know, the last time you've been to LA, but you get off that plane, you know, in June gloom. I'd never been here. You know, they pick you up, they take you to the hotel and it was just, I didn't have a car. I didn't know anybody. Look, they were really cool at the show. Every one of the writers called me that weekend. So awesome. Everyone, we can't welcome aboard. We can't wait to meet you. And we were all this young group from New York. You know, I don't think anybody was from out here. You know, we were all going to do this together. And so anyway, yeah, so that was it. And it wasn't, you know, very long after that. The first few people I met were like George Clooney was a guest and Selma Hayek was a guest and George Foreman and Sarah Jessica Parker. You know, that was Sex in the City time, you know. And not to mention you've got musical guests. All, you know, like a few times a week. So you're meeting like the Foo Fighters, you know, it's like, I mean, and you know, when you're taping, you're 10 feet from them off stage, you know, really. I mean, it was a dream come true and it was unbelievable to me that it had happened. So that's how I got in and then full speed ahead, man. You know, I mean, I stayed in that late night world a while, you know, I wrote jokes, not only, you know, for the Late Late Show, but then, you know, I got introduced to the gang at Saturday Night Live and wrote jokes for Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon for Update. And I used to get my checks from Little Stranger, which is Tina Fey's company. And I kept all the stubs. Matter of fact, I kept the stubs from all the jokes that I sold early on. I have them all in a box and I love them, you know, and some of them I think are good luck. So, you know, and then I, you know, went from that late night world, it was Al Franken who suggested I get into sitcoms. And I was still in this place of, you know, I had just been so focused on the joke writing and doing the best job I could on the Late Late Show. I didn't know anything. And really just trying to, you know, where do I get groceries? You know, I didn't, you know, I'm walking around everywhere. I mean, holy cow. It was such an awkward transition. You're talking about a guy who owned a bar,
right.
You know, just a few months before. And now I'm navigating all these Hollywood personalities, but I just stay focused on my writing. You know, I really loved it so much. I really did truly find what I was meant to do. And then Al said, you got to get into sitcoms, you know, in movies. This is where you belong in the scripted world. And they have, you know, the Writers Guild out here has an unbelievable library with every script that's awesome, you know, and there's a great TV museum here with all the, you know, episodes to watch. And I would just go, you know, I would go as often as I could whenever I had time. I'd spend days there just devouring scripts, you know, and reading everything I could get my hands on. So much so, there was this great librarian at the WGA, the Writers Guild of America West. I still remember her name. Well, I don't. Might have been Karen Lyons. I'm not sure. But she was very disciplined. You know, you couldn't bring in beverages. You know, you can't take pictures, anything. You can't write on anything. These are really, you know, precious scripts. You know, these are Oscar winners, yeah, and Emmy winners, and they're all in a beautiful case. And I went so often that she had someone who helped her named Jimmy Bangley. I do remember his name. And I went to his memorial services after he passed. That's how close I got to these people. But I remember once she gave me the keys to the case to open the scripts. That's how often I was there. And that was it. So, you know, I just taught myself. You know, I'd bring a stopwatch to the TV museum and a legal pad, and I would time how long scenes were, how funny each page was supposed to be. I mean, it's so crazy when I think about it, you know, but that's what I was doing. And I wrote spec after spec after spec after spec. And, you know, and then I got another lucky break. I gave a script to a barber in Larchmont here in Los Angeles. I mean, come on, it's funny when you say it out loud. But this guy, you know, I went to this barber shop in Larchmont, and I needed a new barber because my last barber had Parkinson's. So I'd be getting these crooked haircuts, and my friend.
What?
They'd say, what are you doing? And I said, well, you know, it's the only barber I know in Los Angeles. And they said, you go to Larchmont. You'll love Larchmont. You know, it's old school. It's like New York, you know. And so I went there, and there was a picture of Ray Romano on this old school barber's wall. The barber's name was Jerry Catone. He has since passed, but he was Sicilian and an old guy, and he had been there forever. And so I get him my haircut, and this is the first time I meet the guy, and I see Ray Romano on the wall. I said, oh, Jerry, I said, I'm trying to get into the sitcom world, you know? And that was the number one show at the time, Everybody Loves Raymond. You know, I mean, it was getting 23 million viewers a week. They don't do that now. And he said, you know, no, Ray doesn't come in here, but one of his producers does. And I said, is there any way you can make an intro? And he says, no. He said, I can't get involved. He said, I cut people's hair, and it's a very, you know, it's a trusting place. Barbers can't really get involved with that sort of stuff. But I had given him a business card anyway. You know, I had a worldwide trousers. You know, Dave Letterman had two companies. I don't know if he still does. One was Worldwide Pants, and then another one, Worldwide Trousers, which he did for the Late Late Show. So I had my Worldwide Trousers card, and Letterman was an executive producer of Raymond. So I thought I had a shot. Exactly. So I said, you know, I had worked for Dave before, and he took my card, and that was it. And then some time went by, and I was getting my hair cut. I think it was holiday time. I kind of remember Christmas. And he said, you know, I don't know what it is about you, but I decided to give your card to that producer. I've never done it before. and he said, but the guy specifically told me there's no jobs. You know, there's no way you're going to sell anything. The show is over. You know, it had been on for like I don't know, 12 years. They had done 200 and whatever. I mean, it was, you know, just they're done. And he said the best he might be able to do is have you come see a show at some point. I had never been to a sitcom taping. You know, I'd been to the late night stuff, but never on a sitcom. And the guy calls me, Skelton. The guy calls me and he says, "Hey," he said, "I've been getting my hair cut from Jerry for a long time. He's never bothered me about anything." He said, "But he's Sicilian," and he specifically said he vouched for you. So he said, "Why don't you come see a show?" And he said, "And don't bring me any scripts."
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Ralph's, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Ralph's worth it every time. Ralph's, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I brought three scripts and and I showed up and I meet him and he puts me in the audience and he says, "I told you not to bring any scripts." He said, I'll take the top one. How does that sound?" And I said, "It sounds good." And I had written like every topical spec script you could, which, you know, if anyone doesn't know what that means, you know, they just, like, if a show's on TV, you write an example of what that show could be. Today, it's not as much like that. But I'd written out of, you know, all the shows at the time, you know, like Bernie Mac and things. Every one I had written, many of them. And so I wrote an old Dick Van Dyke. I thought, oh, that'd be fun. I'll do something that probably every other writer in town isn't doing. And luckily, that's the one he took off the top. And I, you know, some of these facts I don't remember quite right. You know, it was a while ago, but I think he showed it to the creator, Phil Rosenthal, during the taping or had a conversation about it. Regardless of what happened, it did lead to, when the show was over, he said, "You know, why don't you come up to come up to Ray's dressing room? I think he'd like you, and let's see what you got. If you used to work for Ray, you know, for Letterman, let's see if you got some funny in you." And we punched up a script. You know, it was unbelievable. You know, all the Emmy winning writers were in there. You know, the staff. I remember it was really dark. They had, you know, a light on in the corner, and I remember meeting Mike Scully, who you know, was the showrunner of The Simpsons. He's still over there, unbelievable. And you know, Lou Schneider, Mike Royce, and, you know, Ray, of course, was there, and all of these guys that I had studied. I couldn't even believe I was, and you know, there were probably, and I think Tucker was there. I mean, the whole room was full. So forgive me if I'm forgetting anyone, but it was a while ago. But I remember being so honored, and I couldn't even believe that it had happened. And you know, and that's how I got the introduction. Now there's other parts of that story. You know, I know we don't have a ton of time, but, you know, there are other parts of it, and I'll give you a very abbreviated version so you understand when I say I'm a guy of faith too. But it turns out that my ex-wife's family, when I was back in New York before I became a writer, you know, when I was in the college bar business, they had a family friend who was a Franciscan nun. Her name was Sister Virginia. And I became very close with Sister Virginia. It was strange because it wasn't like my ex-wife was very friendly with her, but she and I had kind of like a cool vibe together, you know? And so we became friends, and she always encouraged me to be a writer, Sister Virginia. And when I got moved out here, she was very happy that, you know, that I got the job. And she used to always say, "Hey, you know, I know a writer in Los Angeles. She somehow had a connection from Schenectady, New York. You know, she had a connection of somebody that, you know, was a writer here. And I used, you know, she's an 80-year-old nun.
Yeah.
So I don't know how valid that story was, but, you know, Hollywood, baby, if you can believe this, it was that producer I met in that barbershop that she knew.
And it was way.
And when I left the show that night, this is unbelievable. You know, this producer called me a couple of days later. He goes, you know, you left. He said, me and Ray were doing stand-up in Schenectady, New York a couple of years ago, and Ray went and got some cannoli in a bakery, and then he won his Emmy, and he became very superstitious, you know, about those cannoli, and the baker from Schenectady started to FedEx him these cannoli on tape nights, and there was a note in there from a nun not long
what?
Ago. Yeah. And it said she knew a guy who came, you know, a young guy came into LA, and if we ever met him, please give him a meeting. And when you left, he said, is it possible that that's the guy? And he said, you know, we looked, we found the note, and your business card was in there. So, you know, I got to go in and pitch.
Wow.
Yeah. I got to go and pitch, you know, right in under the line, the show was ending. And I went in and I pitched a very personal story, based on some, you know, I had really bad OCD as a kid. And, one of the characters did something like that. You know, Brad Garrett played, Ray's brother, Robert Barone. And the episode was called Crazy Chin. And I did sell that story. I sold it, you know, and Phil submitted it for Emmy consideration, and you know, they kind of brought me in over there, and it changed my life, you know. So that's, you know, you say it in 20 minutes and it sounds kind of like an easy path like, you know, of a guy just kind of hustling and getting in, but holy cow, man, I mean, you know, you're just at it trying everything.
Yeah.
And but I will say that since that break in Raymond, things have been, you know, pretty steady, you know, and I am the only guy who wrote for Everybody Loves Raymond and Everybody Hates Chris.
That's so cool though.
yeah. Chris Rock's show, you know, about his youth, which was created by Chris Rock and Ollie Leroy. And, you know, Ollie is an unbelievable writer and person, and we became very good friends, and we ended up doing a series after Chris called Are We There Yet? Which was a syndicated show with Terry Crews and Cube and Essence Atkins and Keisha Sharp and Tiala Dunn. It was a really fun experience. Shot 100 of them in a year. And, you know, and I've been going. And then during the pandemic, you know, I mean, I'm just TV, movie, you know, very focused. I love what I do. I work and hustle just as hard now, probably harder as I did when I'm telling you when I first got in, you know, and whenever I talk to anybody who's kind of trying to get in, I tell them that. I say, man, you gotta work hard, because I've been, you know, I'm on the ladder and have been, you know, and I'm up there a little bit, you know, I've had some success. I live a really unbelievable life. I said, but that's what you're up against. Because I write every day, all day, you know, and I love what I do. And, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes to continue to do what I do. And when the pandemic hit, what do you do? So I wrote a book. I finally, you know, what could I sell? And I finally wrote All I Need to Know I Learned from My College Bar, which are all these, you know, life lessons that I learned when I owned that college bar in college that helped me succeed and get into, you know, this business and continue to have, you know, life in it. And, you know, I had so much fun, Kelton, putting that book together, you know, so much fun.
That seems like it. It really comes through, and it's hilarious because I think it's the best of both your, you know, kind of described as your unique comic sensibility, but also your work ethic, which as you talk about it becomes very clear that, you know, as you said, you're still kind of hustling and you know, there's no quit in you. And it's really cool. It's a really cool story. I mean, I think super inspiring for anybody who is kind of, you know, wondering how to get into the business. Well, I mean, that's a kind of a crash course in how hard you have had to hustle to get to where you are today, and that you're still going at it. But congrats on the work, and this is a lot of fun.
Thank you.
All I Need to Know I Learned from My College Bar is hilarious, and of course, you know, you kind of condensed. You do a condensed version of the story you just told us in the intro, which I thought was very inspiring. But at the same time, you know, you've rubbed elbows with some truly talented folks out there in Hollywood and New York as well. But yeah, this is a cool book, and the story itself behind owning a bar in college is just fascinating. That you were hustling in college, you're literally running this place till, you know, 3 a.m. And I'll tell you from experience, I have also managed a college bar. I actually grew up in Boulder, Colorado. So I was going to college bars in high school, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's what you do.
Yeah.
When you have a fake ID. And but if you grew up in a college town, and CU is a notorious party town, still is to this day, I think, because the kids literally will riot in the streets and like burn the city down once a year because they get so hammered.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, but these are really, you know, again, kind of this cathedral of knowledge, as you call it, of, you know, just kind of like the, I don't know, there is something kind of spiritual about a college bar. You know, it's like your first experience away from home, and then all of a sudden there's this place where you can congregate and it's warm and and you do take some important lessons away. I wanted to give you my top three, but it's so much fun stuff in here, and the illustrations are great. I mean, this is a truly, truly talented illustrator as well, right?
Antonio Pena, unbelievable. You know, he contributes to the New Yorker. He's in Milan. He's so special. You know, I mean, the guy is so talented. He's so funny. Does not speak English as his first language. I would send him this clip art, you know, the ideas of the joke. I mean, it was unbelievable. To Italy, I'd wake up in the morning and the illustration, you know, each page is an illustration. And, you know, our collaboration, I was a little worried because of the English not being the first language and the cultural thing. But his agent is this woman named Ella Lupo, and she's an agent for illustrators out of New York. She owns Purple Rain Illustrators, and she is all about art. And she believed in this book, Kelton, before, you know, anybody, you know. And I remember when I reached out to her, she said, I read the tax. You're going to sell this book. And she sent me a list of, you know, people that she thought might be good illustrators. And, you know, I owe her a lot. She's a big part of it now too. I mean, we're all enjoying the success and having fun together. But Antonio, man, he has a great work ethic too. You know, you can only imagine, you know, the work he had to do. You know, I'd be like, oh, you know, yeah, that's the third draft of that drawing, but how about one more? It could be a little funnier. Okay. Like, what are you talking about? I know. I had to say, look, Antonio, I get it, but I really love the funny, man. We got to really Amazing. Make it pop, you know?
Amazing. Well, of course, I'll link to all the things. I will link to the publisher's website. Obviously, I will link to your IMDb so that listeners can get an idea of this fascinating storied career that you've had in TV and film. And then you have a swag page. Let's see, collegebarbook.com, which I got to check out. I want all the things. but also a YouTube channel, which I thought was really cool to see some of these, like, celebs doing shout outs about things that they learned at their college bar. And I thought Tom Arnold's was especially funny.
Thanks for checking it out.
Yeah, for sure. There was a lot of good ones.
It's just getting started, the college bar challenge. And
for sure.
Kelton, you told me you run in a college bar. You've got to do one for me.
Yeah, okay. Right. So I actually had three, but I'll do them really quick. So the first one was always over tip on your first visit. Over tip on your first visit, because then you'll always get good service. Hands down. And I remember this. You remember the bad tippers. You don't, you know? You remember that guy that forgot to tip you. You're like, that fucking asshole.
That's funny. I have a funny story right before we go. I'm going to tell you.
Okay,
just
perfect.
Based on that. Yeah.
And, the second one was the cocktail waitress doesn't really like you, even though she's flirting with you. She doesn't like you at all. Okay.
That's great. That is great.
And the third one was...
that's a genius one. We're going to have to get that on film, Kelton. That's a genius one.
All right. if someone offers you on your 21st birthday a free shot, and it is a it is described as a cement mixer. Do not accept. Do not accept.
Oh, those are great. I really love those last two especially. So on the note of the tipping, but yeah, if you would please consider doing that second one, the cocktail waitress on film, and sending it for the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, 100. I'll email it over later today.
But so I have an interview in Syracuse tomorrow for the paper, the Post Standard, and he says I have a buddy. He said he remembers you. Do you remember Chris? Do you remember him when you were bartending? His name is Chris Connor. I think that was his name. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. And I said, nah, you know, I said, Chris, his name is Chris too. I said, Chris, it's been a long time. I said, I wasn't good at names then. I said, I'm not good, you know, now. But I waited a second, and this was just so funny to me because I remembered this guy at the corner of the bar. I didn't remember his name or anything like that, but I said, Rolling Rock. He used to love Rolling Rock. And I remember the guy would always leave like $20, you know, right when he would get out, he would say, keep the roll. And I thought, man, that is so funny that I remember the guy's drink, but not his name 20 years later.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
truly.
Well, this has been so much fun, Kel.
Yeah. I want to have you back. Absolutely. Would you do a part two with us, and we'll talk a little bit more about process and kind of.
Of course. Is there anything else now that you want to ask me, or do you want to do it another time? I mean, I'll come back, of course.
I would love to. Well, first of all, you know, I mean, describe, like, obviously you've written kind of this, you know, I mean, we're not calling it a memoir, but it's kind of a memoir, but it's also, again, what we're describing as, you know, it's about, as you put it, about thinking, not drinking. Features text, hilarious illustrations, high concept life wisdom humor book, also tapping into your, again, kind of all of your life experience. But talk about kind of your process kind of in a nutshell now. You said you're writing all day, every day. What does that look and feel like for you?
Yeah, you know, I hear you ask that, you know, on the podcast. And I find it interesting, you know, because I mean, it's my job. You know, I mean, I get up, I work out, and I go for a run, or I go to the Y here. And, you know, I live in a part of LA on the west side called the Palisades. And, and then I get to it. You know, I mean, I've been doing it since I got that first job in 99. You know, I mean, I just sit down and I write. You know, I'm a worker, you know, and I think it served me, you know, coming from the world of business, you know, in owning the bars and stuff. And, you know, I'd been working my tail off as a kid, you know, things that today people really wouldn't understand, you know, and probably couldn't happen today. I had my own apartment when I was 16 years old in Buffalo. I was selling TV guides and, I was a janitor at a AAA building after school. And that's how, you know, that's what I was doing. And it was, you know, I mean, look, funny, I think, comes from dark places, probably, you know, for me, it does anyway. So I got lucky that it turned into the funny. You know, I've done a lot of work on myself to understand that. But, you know, I was working hard since I was a child, you know, and that work ethic has stayed with me. So, you know, I get up and I write. You know, I take a break for lunch. At the end of the day, I might do another, quick hike or something. I try to always put my pen down at 7 o'clock. There's a really great, there's a classical music station here that does a transition at 7. And I keep it on in the background all day, lightly. And whenever I hear that transition, you know, that's usually when I stop. You know, when I stop writing. I mean, sometimes right now, you know, I know nothing about social media. I wasn't even on social media until, you know, like 2 months ago. And I've never done debut book, a book before. This is the first one. So, when the publisher suggested, hey, you know, you know, can you do some social media? I was like, I don't have any accounts. I don't know what the heck to do. And so I've been learning it. And then I had this idea for the College Bar Challenge. So, you know, we've been going through this storm here the last few days. And, you know, man, I've been having so much fun. You know, I'm calling I call Al Franken. Al, I know this is out of the box. I need you to do a College Bar Challenge for me. What is it? You got to say your name where it's best. You know, he does it. I got to call Josh Radner, our buddy of Craig's at How I Met Your Mother. Josh, I got a favor to ask you. But, you know, and you know, it's fun for me. You say the swag thing. I thought, you know, I'm going to put up a thing. I mean, when I had Maggie's, man, that staff shirt, people would offer me anything for a staff shirt. What do you want for a staff shirt? They're not for sale. I give you anything, you know, I can't give it to you. Because I know what you're going to do. You're going to put it on and cause a whole bunch of trouble.
Sure.
And you're going to say, you work here. No. So I thought, oh, I'll sell staff shirts. I'll sell, you know, and I went on to the Syracuse Alumni Network, you know, and I did a little, you know, this is fun for me. I've never done it, you know, and we're picketing. So it's like I picket right now, you know, I also get up probably 3-4 hours earlier than normal. Get everything I need done. Then I go, I have a neighbor who I just wrote a movie with. His name's David Tuohy. He's an unbelievable writer and director. His first movie was The Fugitive with Harrison Ford. He's older than me, but we've become friends and we just wrote this really cool movie together. So we go to each different lot and, you know, we do that for a few hours. Then we come back and I get right back to it. So it's, and then on our, you know, the storm here hit. And I was just, you know, I was just thankful the internet stayed up because I needed to change some stuff online about the social media and the swag and the, you know, so, man, I'm always at it. And
still hustling.
Know, yeah, I love what I do. And you know, Kelton, I love LA. I love it. I mean, being from Buffalo, I just love it. So process, I write. That's it. You know, I don't need anything. I need a pen. I need some electricity so my laptop works. That's it. As long as I have that. Matter of fact, I almost went and bought a backup generator for my laptop in case the storm took out the energy. So I'm not a process guy. I've heard cool things on your show. You know, I like candles. I do this. That's the other thing. I need two things. I need electricity and I need caffeine.
There you go. I was gonna ask. Coffee, right?
Coffee, man. That's it. And I try to stop at 3 small cups. Or I talk even faster than I am now.
LA has some great coffee. Next time when you come back, we'll talk about a little bit more about LA and the lore and Hollywood and everything. And maybe hopefully we can talk about strike. Obviously the writers have been on strike for like about 100 days plus now, is that right?
That's right. Writers, you know, and SAG has joined. I mean, the energy is unbelievable. But, you know, everybody's pretty optimistic, I think, that the negotiations are moving along and, you know, hopefully in the right direction.
For sure. Well, we can talk about that when you come back. We can talk about LA. I did live in LA for 5 years.
All right.
And I worked probably in some restaurants that you've eaten at, which was a kind of a mainstay that did, it was like the first Napolitana brick oven. Pizza, like certified brick oven, like they brought the brick from, you know, Italy, and lived there for 5 years. Would love to talk about the lore. I also worked in a restaurant in the Golden Triangle there. That would be Beverly Hills, called Da Vinci, and it was the spot where Dean Martin ate every night. He had his own booth, and when he passed, they put up a black velvet painting.
Oh, that's cool.
Over
what's
the
this
bar.
Place called? What's it called?
It was called Da Vinci. Oh. Da Vinci, Ristorante Da Vinci.
I love it. Hey, I picked the church I go to because they said Sinatra had his memorial services there, the Good Shepherd Church in Beverly Hills. So I get it. There's a great chocolate shop in Beverly Hills. I love a restaurant over there on Cannon, and there's a chocolate shop, old school. And they have these chocolates called the Dean Martin, the Frank Sinatra. And I guess there used to be a martini bar right across from it. And they'd go in, they'd get a couple chocolates and get their martinis and enjoy.
Yeah. So I think the lore was that Dino ate every night at Da Vinci. And then right down the way was a competitor, Dolce Vita, which is where Frank Sinatra would eat. And so they had their like dueling, like, you know, little martini bars.
Good life, man.
Yeah, it was
cool.
You can
live a good life here in LA.
Lots of fun lore. I want to have you back and talk about all the things.
Absolutely.
What your next adventure is going to be.
I love those guys so much. I even, you know, Sinatra had a place out in Palm Springs. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Fantastic place, you know. I bought a place out there too. I was that attracted to it. And,
yeah.
You know, that energy, I'd sold it right before, we hit the pandemic, but I had it a few years and it was a ton of fun. But, you know, his place out there, Sinatra's, you know, he had like a train, you know, he had like toy trains set up and I'd follow his restaurant path out there, too. So I love good food. Love
cool.
good food. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have lots more to talk about.
Okay.
It has truly been a pleasure, Adam. Best of luck. With things moving forward with the book, obviously we'll link to all the things, the socials, and
I appreciate that.
It's been a pleasure getting to hear your truly inspiring story, and I want to have you back, so we'll talk again soon.
I look forward to it, and I look forward to seeing your video. I'm not letting you off the hook.
Okay.
And I really appreciate you having me on, and you know, it was really fun, and I love what you're doing here. So thanks so much. A lot of gratitude to you.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.